Eat Drink Indiana Radio is brought to you by Eskenazi Health, one of Central Indiana's leading providers of health care. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.
Welcome to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD to the Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. This week on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we are focusing on beer, how it's judged, what to look for, how to pair it, and what's happening with local beer trends. We'll hear from Bob Mack of Monarch Beverage, a beer judge and certified Cicerone, and we'll also talk with Sandy Cockerham, a Lilly research scientist who's also a Grandmaster level beer judge. We'll also talk with Mike Sale of Brew Bracket, who has launched a Kickstarter campaign to fund a home game version of his popular Beer Bracket events. But first, we'll be focusing on the Indie Film Fest, which has begun its 10-day run, and which also happens to have a beer-focused film. But today, we'll be talking with local chef and restaurateur Neil Brown about the restaurant-focused film For Grace, about Chicago chef Curtis Duffy. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. We have got a very beer-centric episode on tap today, pun intended. But before we get to the refreshments, so to speak, we've got a movie to talk about. Now, we're typically more about restaurant reviews and movie reviews here at Eat Drink Indiana Radio, but the 2015 Indie Film Fest has started its 10-day run, and one film, one about a restaurant, of course, was a must-see for me, and I'm guessing for any restaurant fan.
An absolutely beautiful documentary titled For Grace, which is, if you're a foodie or a fan of restaurants or the biz, so to speak, it's an absolutely amazing film.
Craig Mintz, executive director of the Indie Film Fest, which runs through July 25th with more than 100 films, tells us how For Grace became a part of the festival.
That was actually a film that was submitted fairly early on in the process and just got rave reviews from all of our screeners, and the points that were allotted for it were just stellar. So it was kind of an early shoe-in, so to speak, to make it into the festival. But yeah, it was. There hasn't been a person that watched that movie that hasn't been like, wow, you know, what a powerful film.
And it is. For Grace shows in stark detail the sacrifices Chef Curtis Duffy, or any chef working at that level, at that 2 and 3 Michelin star level, often has to make. As the chef says, you sacrifice on every single level of your life. It's the lifestyle of a chef. The film also covers his difficult childhood and the tragedy of his parents' deaths, but it also shows how a devoted middle school home ec teacher became a key figure in his life. To create the documentary, Chicago Tribune reporter Kevin Pang followed Duffy for a year and a half, through closing the restaurant where he was working, to the first visits at what would become his own restaurant, Grace, to opening night, and chronicles all the challenges along the way, including those in his personal life as a chef separates from his wife and deals with the sacrifices required of a chef at one of the country's best restaurants. I found the film to be moving and inspiring and fascinating, a real look behind the kitchen door and into the personal life of one of the country's top chefs. To find out, though, what a chef would think about the film, I watched For Grace with Indianapolis chef and restaurateur Neil Brown of Pizzology and the Libertine Liquor Bar. For Grace, you know, Curtis Duffy. So what was your reaction to the documentary itself?
Well, it's gorgeous. I mean, I think it captures, I think it really well captures sort of the emotional sort of side of opening a restaurant. I think they exhibited and captured very well sort of the, it's agonizing, right? Like to think about every single detail and then have to teach people every detail, knowing that you're never going to be able to fully instill the passion that you have in these people, right? And that's pretty special. Like, that's, I think that's what makes a great restaurant, is transferring that passion. So that was cool how they captured that.
Was it realistic? Because you've opened restaurants, you've closed restaurants. You know, is it real?
I think it was very realistic. You could tell that he was, when they closed, even though he, you know, in the beginning of that movie, when they were in Avenues, he said, "I hate this kitchen." And am I unhappy here? Yes, I'm unhappy here. I think they captured that. It's, you know, you're never satisfied, right? So he was trying to, like, convey that, I just want something better. I want a place where I can showcase and do these things better. And so, yeah, that was, you know, that was a really poignant sort of, I think for him, that was probably the turning point to say, we just need better. If we're going to do better, we have to have a better space to do it in. So,
well, and he talked about not having enough coffee cups, not having enough, you know, silverware, you know.
And that's real. I mean, that's
real. Is that a real concern?
That's real. I mean, I'm sitting, when I was seeing that, I was like, yeah, that's, you know, when the food and beverage director, the sommelier, has to be the expediter because you can't afford to bring on, a person specifically to make sure every plate is perfect. Yes. I mean, that is real. That is real life. I mean, that's how restaurants work. It's like, where do you make concessions and how many hats does each person have to wear?
What do you think about the story? You know, we've talked a little bit about his background, because Curtis Duffy, you know, came from a very difficult, awful childhood background, you know.
Yeah.
Murder, suicide, his father killed his mother and killed himself. So a terrible background. Does that change, you know, how you look at him?
Drastically, yeah. I mean, you know, I think if you don't know him, which most people don't, obviously, you think that this is a cook that, you know, came from Trotters, came from Alinea, and he did what all of us do. He just kind of worked his way up. But then when you hear really what drives that guy, and what drives that guy is not, what drives him is his own sort of, I think, I'm totally assuming here, but what drives him is his own sort of unacceptance of any kind of failure whatsoever, of being better than what he came from. And that is a theme that you will always find in restaurants.
Really?
I think so.
You think?
Well, I mean, restaurants are we all know this, and I think it's well documented that they're places where that accept just about anyone. It's like, you know, I think Bourdain sort of first sort of brought it to light that it's the land of misfit toys. And it's amazing when you think about a group of people who, you know, Curtis Duffy did not grow up eating at a white tablecloth. You know, that guy probably never ate in a white tablecloth restaurant growing up. So how does he not only come from a place where he's never done that, but to get to a pinnacle, to get to the pinnacle of, like, this is what fine dining should be. I mean, that's nothing but his own mind saying everything has to be better.
Three Michelin stars, right? How do you get there from such a horrible, troubled life?
Right. How do you come from, you know, a small town in Illinois or a small town in Indiana and achieve three Michelin stars? And, you know, one of the things that I noticed in that movie was that they had, where a lot of places have at their expo table, they have blue tape. And this comes from, this is a tradition that was started at French Laundry. They have a message every day that they write. So the tablecloths are taped down at the expo station with blue tape. And at French Laundry, they write every day a new message on the blue tape. And it's usually something of, like, greatness or inspiration to remind people every day, you know, why you're here, why you're doing what you're doing. And I noticed in that movie that They had a strip of blue tape across one of the walls in there, and it said, "Are you going to be great today?" And each side had three Michelin stars, right? It had three stars on each side of that statement. So, you know, constant reminders of the gravity of what you're doing. It's not, we're not just here to cook. We're not, certainly we're not here to have fun. We're here to achieve a goal. We're here to aspire to something far greater than what most people are able to achieve. And so constant reminders, and it's, that's impressive.
Are those
how someone is able to motivate themselves to do that every day is fascinating.
How do you find the motivation to keep pushing forward? I mean, you know, you're
fear of failure.
Well, it's fear of failure, and it's part fear of failure, and it's part you know, just your drive. I've always been driven by people telling me what I can't do, because that's what I'm driven by. That's what fuels me, is when people say, "You're out of your mind. This isn't smart." Well, I know better than you do. I'm confident that what I'm thinking is good, and that we can make it great. He's taking that to an extreme level, just like Grant Achatz is, just like Wiley Dufresne did. And, you know, it's just, you just get it in your head that you can achieve greatness. And I think a lot of people do that, but executing is a whole different story.
So do you think the documentary is, think it's something that will appeal to the public, or is it too much inside baseball?
Oh, no. People love inside baseball. Are you kidding me? Yeah. No, I think it's realistic. Yeah, there's nothing fabricated. Agonizing. It's you know, the guy got divorced during the opening of this thing. He literally sacrificed everything to make this restaurant great.
And that's realistic as well, right?
Very realistic, yeah. Yeah. On just about every level.
I've been talking with chef and restaurateur Neil Brown about the documentary For Grace, which will be shown Monday and Thursday as part of the Indy Film Fest. For showing times and more details about the documentary, go to indiefilmfest.org. So far today, here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we have been talking about a food-related documentary, For Grace, that is being shown at the Indy Film Fest, which is going on now through July 25th. Well, the festival also has a beer-related film in the lineup as well. Blood, Sweat, and Beer is a documentary about the explosive growth of the craft beer movement, and that film follows two startup breweries. You can catch that at screenings on Sunday and Tuesday. And after judging at a local beer event last weekend, the Bacon and Beer Challenge, which drew 2,500 attendees, I certainly saw firsthand the popularity of some of our local beers. I got to judge with local Cicerone and certified beer judge Bob Mack of Monarch Beverage, and for me, it was certainly an education. I caught up with Bob after the event to talk a little bit more about judging and beer styles and all those IPAs that we tasted. So tell me a little bit about how you approached that sort of an event where we were judging upwards of 20 different beers in a particular category.
Well, it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. And we got to judge a single, essentially, style of beer, IPAs, in a real judging competition, at a professional-level judging competition. You'd be focused on specific beer styles. And so that was good.
Now, this was a very casual event. This was a casual beer and bacon fest sort of event.
This is a little more casual. We're outdoors, and we're on foot. We're going from table to table, trying different beers. In not necessarily a controlled environment, but a real comfortable environment. We're tasting IPAs. So essentially, as I go from table to table, I'm thinking or trying to think of five different things. First of all, I'm trying to put the brewery name and the beer name out of my mind. I'm trying to keep it unbiased as much as I can.
So as to not be biased by some of your favorite brewers or breweries.
Correct, because I see people I know, I see brands that I know, and that I have a predisposition to like. In a real judging competition, it would be blind. You would get samples that were unnamed, and you would be told what style they are. So that is a little bit of a difficulty in this situation. However, once you get to the beer, you're really looking for five different things to try to gauge the quality of that beer on, relatively speaking. And in the industry, we often call it AATMF, appearance, aroma, taste, mouthfeel, and finish, AATMF. And so we start with appearance. It was a little difficult for us because we had opaque ceramic.
That's right. We couldn't look through the cup and see what the beer might look like in glass.
Right. But as you know, you're judging an IPA, you should know that an IPA should come within a certain color range. And you come to expect what that color range is. When you see something outside of that color range, you start to think, maybe this is questionable. Maybe the malt, which provides the color, wasn't properly used, or it wasn't the proper malt. Appearance can also include the head, the foam on top of the beer. If you see a beer that's completely flat with no head, carbonation problem, and that's a difficulty that you're probably going to ding that beer on. You could also see in appearance how the beer clings to or does not cling to the side of the glass. And again, we didn't have a clear glass, so that was hard to see too, but a good quality, well-brewed beer is typically going to leave a bit of lacing with the foam on the side of the glass that's fairly uniform. If you see patterns like rings at certain points that aren't related to where you sipped and stopped, it could be that the glass is dirty, and that can be a big issue. But appearance can cover all of those things. Even the color of the foam is part of the appearance.
So we could have been judging on all of those categories, but now we were able to judge on aroma, certainly. Then the next A on the list, right?
Yes. Aroma, you're looking for, with an IPA particularly, you're generally looking for hop-related aromas. What kind of aromas? Am I getting American hop aromas, which could be piney or citrusy or fruity? Am I getting English hop aromas, which could be more earthy or grassy?
Now, I don't think people, perhaps the casual beer fan might not know about those distinctions, but those are significant, right?
Very significant distinctions. And again, in a professional judging situation, you'd probably be only doing English IPAs or American IPAs or Imperial IPAs. And of course, now there are red IPAs, black IPAs, Belgian IPAs, white IPAs.
It's a very popular category, right?
Very popular category. Since we're sort of judging all of those in one swoop amongst the 20 or so beers we had, you're maybe looking at aroma to give you a clue as to what kind of IPA it is, but in the aroma world, you're also looking for aromas that don't belong in a beer or in that beer. And those could be sort of off flavors. If something smells, let's say, just faintly like alcohol or kerosene or something, that's a bad aroma, and you wouldn't expect that, and you wouldn't want that, and that's a good clue that maybe there's a defect in that beer.
Now, what was the next one then?
The next one would be taste.
Now this is the category people think. I'm sure they think that we're judging mostly. Is this the most important category?
You know, it is often, and it is usually weighted more heavily than the other categories, because really, after all, I think the beer experience includes all five of these things, but taste is really what people focus on, and I think it's what brewers and consumers alike focus on. So taste is more heavily weighted, even though it's one of five. And in taste, now you're looking for some things that are similar to the aroma and appearance categories. You're looking for things that don't belong. You're looking for things that you expect in a certain style of beer. Am I getting both bitterness and hop flavors, which are two different things? A lot of people think of hops as just being bitter, but hops provide both bitterness to offset or balance sweetness, And hops provide a huge range of flavor. There are hundreds of varieties of hops. And hops can provide all sorts of flavors. So you're looking for those things in the taste. We are also looking for, and in some IPAs, I think on in that competition we got this and some we didn't, we're looking for malt. Malt is really the backbone and the base of beer, and that's malted barley typically. And malt provides a lot of flavor as well in addition to color. And a really good IPA, my opinion, has a malt component to it, even though it's a very hop-forward experience. Hops is the key to IPAs, India Pale Ales.
It is, and that's the, I think that's the characteristic that most people are looking for, that hoppy flavor, the bitterness maybe is how people might recognize it.
Yes, bitterness, and a lot of times, fruity, grassy, piney, citrusy, herbal, all kinds of flavors. I even sometimes pick out hop flavors that sort of have a bit of a licorice or all kinds of other flavor components to it. So many varieties of hops, and hops, like grapes in the wine world, vary from year to year. So let's say a Centennial hop, for example, which is one of my favorites, or Citra hop, which was very popular on Saturday and is a very popular hop right now. Citra hops might taste one way this year. They might have a real tropical fruit component this year, but that next year it might fade, and that's based on weather conditions, moisture, temperature in the hop growing region where those hops came from.
Now, what's the next category we need to think about as we're tasting?
The next category is mouthfeel, and I think it's one of the more underrated categories. We take it for granted, and it's easily, a lot of the mouthfeel components are confused often with the taste, because mouthfeel is just what the beer feels like in your mouth. Mouthfeel will include things like carbonation. Is this beer flat, or is it well carbonated, or is it over carbonated? That's a mouthfeel issue. And people recognize flat beer when they put it in their mouth, but I think they often say, well, that's a taste problem. And really, it's a mouthfeel. It's more of a feel sense versus a taste sense. Astringency is another mouthfeel. Astringency, and that word probably rings a bell to people. They think of astringency with sometimes things that are sort of chemical or otherwise. The sides of your tongue in particular detect astringency as more of a feel than as a taste. And you almost get that sort of tingly cringe feeling when you get something really astringent on the sides of your tongue. And a good beer generally should not be astringent. Unfortunately, we didn't really taste any astringent beers.
Are we up to the final one? As far as on our list of judging things?
Finish.
This is why it's very important when we're taking a complete sip of the beer, right?
Yes, and of course it's grueling to keep swallowing all of those beers.
Because you just have to taste the whole thing, right?
You do have to taste the whole thing. And of course the folks who were at Brewers Cup that same day had it much tougher because they had a lot more beers to sample than we did. But particularly with IPAs, you want to know how that beer is going to finish. A beer can taste just fine up front and when you start on it, but when you swallow it, you're going to get to some different kinds of taste receptors that may pick up things that the rest of your mouth didn't pick up. And it could be disagreeable. It could taste, you can taste some off flavors. And in particular, hops can be tricky. A brewer has got to be careful with their use of hops in terms of the quality of the hop and the freshness of the hop, because a stale hop or a bad hop can really provide you some disagreeable flavors, especially in the finish. And fortunately, again, we didn't detect much disagreeable on Saturday, but the finish is very important because there are things that are happening there that aren't happening during the rest of the tasting process.
We've been talking with Bob Mack of Monarch Beverage. Stay with us for more here on WFYI and WFYI.org. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Eskenazi Health, providing care to nearly 1 million outpatient visitors each year with the mission to advocate, care, teach, and serve at its hospital and inpatient facility and 11 community health centers located throughout Indianapolis. EskenaziHealth.edu. Now, I tend to be pretty focused on food, both on EatDrinkIndy.com and here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio. So when I had the chance to sit down with certified beer judge Bob Mack, the conversation certainly got around to food. We talked about beer styles and tasting notes too, of course, but I couldn't help but wonder, what beers pair best with, say, barbecue or even sushi?
You know, we think beer has a place at the table, just like wine does. We're not saying it's better or worse. We're saying that it has that spot. And for us to put it in the right spot and the right beer in the right spot with the right food, really understanding that is very important.
So we're in the middle of summer and we have lots of backyard cookouts. So barbecue, you know, like you're doing some ribs on the grill or something like that. Is there a particular type of beer that you might be your go-to?
Yeah, you know, I think of, in this instance, I think of barbecue with a lot of times sort of sweet, rich, and smoky flavors. And so I try to look for beers that have comparable flavor components. And a lot of times amber ales, for example, have some sweetness and some richness. Sometimes even porters. And I know in the summer porters can be a little heavy, but there's a lot of malty richness and sweetness there that'll stand up really well to a heavily sauced barbecue. A lot of times, though, I think the general rule here I'm getting at is think about the flavors that are the key components of your food. So if I'm doing a barbecue and now maybe I'm going to do hamburger, something very simple, but I'm going to put a little blue cheese on that burger, maybe a slice of onion, a little mustard and mayonnaise. Okay, so I've got a little bit of some sharp flavors, some edgy flavors. I think that's where an IPA might play real well, because an IPA can go along nicely, hold its own next to a blue cheese, for example, and not get lost in that mix. A good pairing should complement both. You should get a better experience from both the beer and the food.
How about something like sushi?
Oh, sushi. My favorite kind of beer with sushi is called a white ale. It is a beer of Belgian origin. Most people in this country would be familiar with a beer called Blue Moon, which is available very widely. And Blue Moon is a white ale. It has a component of coriander and orange peel, in the beer. And it's a wheat-based beer. So it's very light, very refreshing, and the spice notes are subtle. So with sushi, a white ale can work really beautifully, because those spice notes are there, but they're generally pretty subtle. And those light orange and or coriander flavors can complement a lot of sushi as well. But it's no harm ordering a Japanese beer also in a sushi restaurant. That's an easy one as well.
We've been talking with certified beer judge Bob Mack of Monarch Beverage. We'll have even more on craft beer, including information on a new home game of a popular beer ranking event. So stay with us here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Well, as you've noticed this week, it's a beer-focused episode of Eat Drink Indiana Radio, and I have to admit that it's been fun learning about beer styles and tasting and judging various beers. That's certainly part of the appeal of craft beer, the fact that there are so many varieties to try. And that may be one of the reasons why Brew Bracket events have become so popular in Indianapolis. Everyone tastes all the beers and chooses their favorites, and the winning beers advance to the next round. Brew Bracket co-founders Mike Sale and Ryan Coyle have put on 10 events so far since holding the first Brew Bracket in March of 2011. And now the two are launching their Brew Bracket home game, which makes it easy to have a Brew Bracket taste-off in your own living room. I got to experience a Brew Bracket home game this past week as Mike and Ryan kicked off a Kickstarter campaign to raise money to produce the games. And I talked with Mike Sale to get the details on how the whole Brew Bracket idea came about. So tell me how the Brew Bracket home game came about, but I think you probably have to start at the home and then go to the public and then come back, right?
Yeah. This goes back probably 7 years to a friend's apartment, and they did the light beer taste test, and it wasn't quite set up like a tournament, but it was just blind tasting of familiar Bud Light, Busch Light, et cetera, macro brands. And the punchline was that once you stripped the labels away, nobody knew at all the beer they swore by, the beer they pledged their allegiance, their wallets to. And it really, I think that planted the seed that there's this very interesting blind tasting aspect that strips away what you thought you knew about a beer and you go by taste alone.
So from that moment, then how did it develop into something that was so public? I mean, Brew Bracket was a big thing right from the start, right?
Yeah, late 2010, we had the idea and we put it all together, worked with the Indiana Brewers Guild for an event in March of 2011. And we led out of the gate with a tournament bracket with 16 Indiana Brewers and IPA.
Okay, so this is structured like a basketball bracket, right?
Exactly, yeah. We use the familiar bracket format, and it simplifies the tasting process. We give people two beers at a time, and that's it. So you pick which one of these two do I like better, and in that process, learn a little bit about why you might like one IPA better than another.
Okay, so you had that, and then where did it go from there? Because it sort of took off, right?
Yeah, the IPA ends up being a great choice for the first round. We did it at the fairgrounds. We had capacity of 400, and we were pushing our limits. And the brewers, we were able to prove to them that we could do this. We had to kind of prove ourselves to the guild and show that we weren't just two jokers that just wanted some free beer.
So you did. So there was a little bit of skepticism about whether you could pull this off, right?
Yeah, exactly. 400 people, 16 beers in a bracket. How fast can people pour? How fast can you fill glasses? And we made it work. It was about a three-hour event. And then from there, actually later in 2011, we went to stouts, and that was our second style. Since then, we ended up having done 10 events. One, we did some flights at a flower and patio show, and we kind of broke the mold of the tournament and introduced people to different varieties of beer. But we've done everything from ambers to wheats to Belgians to Oktoberfest, even a bourbon barrel event where we worked with Harrison Bourbon and gave every brewer a barrel to put whatever they wanted in it.
I mean, that was some pre-event planning going on.
Absolutely. And that's just, again, how this awesome network within Indianapolis works. Josh Hambright, who was with Flat 12 at that point, actually proposed the idea and connected us up with someone at Harrison Bourbon. And the brewers loved it. We gave them the barrels. We bought some of the beer back. They got to keep some. And that was this really first experimental, people coming in and just tasting wild things at that festival.
What's been the feedback?
Maybe you tell me what you think, but my favorite is what I never get tired of hearing is just, I never thought I liked this style as much as I did, or I never understood the depth of the style. And again, that side by side, what you walk away with is we're trying to help make people feel a little smarter about beer. I don't like all IPAs, but I like ones that are a little citrusy or fruity. And now when you go to a big bar with 200 taps, you can at least give the bartender a couple rounded statements that help them find something for you.
You know, that's significant because, you know, IPAs have not, you know, actually been my favorite category. But, you know, I've gone to several tastings lately that seem to be focused on IPA. So I get what you mean. I am finding some that I actually think are all right, that I like. So it was kind of fun going through the Brew Bracket home game with IPAs.
Yeah. And this was the session IPA. So these were at least ratcheted down a little. The IPA can be a palate buster. So these are under 5%. You can have a few of them and keep kind of going on with your evening. So for the kind of launch of the home kit, we wanted to lead off with the session IPAs.
Well, now tell me about the home kit and what's involved in it and what people, you know, what you get in this kit and what you do with it.
So like I said, we did start, you know, many years ago with the light beer taste test. And then before doing Brew Bracket, we piloted a wheat event and some different ones where we ran this event with about 8 people in our house. And it was a hit at that point. It gave us the confidence to do the live events, but we've had people continuing to push for, you know, hey, can we get something where we can do this at our own homes?
So you've got it to put it together. So the kit includes glasses and pitchers and score sheets. So you've put it all together for people.
That's right. Yeah. Over 5 years, we feel comfortable. We proved the concept. It works. It's a great way to taste beer. It's a lot of fun. The bracket's familiar. The competition is fun. People love their bracket to win. They want to pick it. But in reality, when they walk away, it's more about, hey, this is what I liked, and that's interesting. I'm going to go find that again. So we packaged it all up. We have a kit that has all of the host guide, so you can run this yourself. Two pitchers, and then the glassware, the voting brackets, and the pencils. The goal is that we've really enabled it so that one host can kind of have the fun of being the man or woman behind the curtain, and then everybody else gets to blindly taste and really enjoy the bracket side.
So then the next time somebody else could host, and they would get to be the person who picks all the beers, right?
Yeah, in a perfect scenario, you have a monthly, or let's say weekly.
Even better, right?
Yeah, a weekly event, and one person, these are set up for an 8-beer bracket. So one person could go around town or go to a local beer store and pick up 8 beers in any category of your choosing, really. We like the kind of generalizing around a style category, but you can pick whatever feels right for you to taste head-to-head and have people figure out what they like.
So you could have you know, a national brand in there. You could have a home brew in there as well. So you could really mix it up and put some ringers in there.
That's right. Yeah, tonight we did the Session IPA, and so we brought in Founders just because that's a classic. Everything else came from Indiana, but we snuck a couple home brews into the mix, and that's, you can do that when you're doing this at your house. It's anything really the host wants to do.
So it's very fun. Now explain a little bit about what the kits will cost and the whole idea of launching a Kickstarter campaign to get this going.
Yeah, the Kickstarter campaign has been frightening, to say the least. We've worked really hard to have a lot of logistics lined up ahead of time and make sure that we can make the kits for what we think we can make them for. So there's been months of work leading up to now. The experience kit, which is the one that contains glassware, pitchers, voting cards for up to 8 people and is reusable, that's $35. And then we have an express kit, which we took away all the glasses and pitchers. We heard some feedback, hey, I've got a ton of glasses. I've been to a brew fest every year for the past 10 years. We said, great. So we got these little reusable decals that go on the glasses and mark them for the orange and the gray. So you can reuse what you have around your house. And that one comes down then to $15.
Now, tell me a little bit about how the Kickstarter works, how long it's going to last, and what you're trying to raise.
Yeah, so we ended up putting a target of $10,000 on Kickstarter, which is something to 300 or 400 kits. We obviously have a great presence and some wonderful friends in Indianapolis, but this would be available nationally. And Kickstarter recommends keeping it under 30 days, so we're running it for about 25. We just put the clock on today and started it, and it's going to be live until August 9th.
Oh my goodness! Now, what are some of the things that, you know, the people who donate to the cause? What are some of the things that they might get as their premiums? Is that how it works?
So yeah, they call them rewards, and the two primary are that exactly what I talked about, the experience kit and the express kit. We've got even a $10 print at home kit. We'll send you some of those reusable decals and give you the PDFs so that you can kind of arm yourself. That's really the down and dirty, just get you into the game. And then we actually have we call it a handcrafted kit, and that's Ryan and I building a wooden box, doubling everything inside of the box, and you know, very custom, kind of hand numbered. And Ryan's great at this type of stuff. I'm great at watching him do this type of stuff. So we only have 25 of those going out. So that's kind of a fun, very limited edition version of the game.
So now tell me a little bit about who's involved with this. You mentioned Ryan. So how did who's involved and how did it come about?
Yeah, that's great. So Ryan Coyle is my co-founder. And we met through actually his wife and at his wedding. His wedding was a destination wedding, so I was not stealing him from the bride. We were hanging out in a pool over a couple beers, and that's where this initial concept came from. And then Jill Vaughn has been a wonderful asset to our team. She helps us with a lot of the social, and both social media as well as social at the brackets, as a butterfly running around and saying hello to everybody, making them happy.
Yeah, the social media aspect of the brackets are fun. You know, you have the Twitter board, and so people are posting their tweets about the event as it's going on. You know, so that's very fun. So you've really engaged with your audience from the very beginning.
Yeah, we had someone push us into doing a tweet wall on maybe our second event, and I was not on board at all. I didn't understand it. I didn't get it, and people love it.
So what do you expect people to take away from this?
We've got our fingers crossed. My favorite part of the video is where we hone in on just this blind tasting aspect. Again, the real game is that you and your friends, in a very safe, fun environment with that familiar bracket, get to taste a bunch of new beers or beers in a different manner. I've often been the man behind the curtain, but when I'm sitting at the table, I'm surprised every time. I walk away thinking way more highly of a beer that I had some jaded perception of beforehand, and go out and refill my beer fridge with some new favorites.
We've been talking with Mike Sale of Brew Bracket, which has a Kickstarter campaign going to fund a new home game version. For information, just go to brewbracket.com. Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Eskenazi Health. With its 315-bed hospital and inpatient facilities and 11 community health centers located throughout Indianapolis, eskenazihealth.edu. So last weekend was a busy one when it comes to craft beer in Indiana. I was at the Bacon and Beer Challenge at Victory Field, but there was also a more serious craft beer event going on, the Brewers Cup, one of the nation's largest competitions, with nearly 1,300 entries from all over the country. Now, Chili Water Brewing Company here in Indianapolis took Best of Show in the professional category and was the Grand Champion Brewery of the Year. To find out a little bit more about the Brewers Cup and more on beer judging, as well as on our local craft beer scene, I talked with Grandmaster level beer judge Sandy Cockerham. Tell me a little bit about judging and about what you do and how you got into it and some of the events maybe that you judge.
Well, I got into it because a friend of mine said that there was going to be a local class given by my friend Ron Smith. And so I took the class and then sat for the exam. At that time, the beer judge certification exam was a two-pronged exam, which consisted of a written portion and a tasting portion. It was pretty brutal. Having sat through a couple bar exams, I can tell you that the level of intensity in writing is pretty similar. And I scored really well on that, scored high enough to go to the national level. And it just took me some time to get the experience points to go to that. And along the way, I discovered I really like judging. I have a good aptitude, have a good palate, understand beer styles and the flaws. And so I probably judge 10 to 16 times a year, mostly in the Midwest. I also do go to large competitions like the Great American Beer Festival and the Festival of Wood and Barrel Aged Beers in Chicago. I've judged as far away as Massachusetts and Portland.
Oh my goodness, how fun is that?
It is really fun. I mean, you get to travel and you get to have beer, so you know that's pretty fun.
Now, you got into beer via homebrewing, right? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I started homebrewing in the late 80s. My main impetus was my dad. My dad would always talk about when he and his brother Art would homebrew and how they would bottle it in old RC Cola syrup bottles and what they used. And I'm, you know, knowing the ingredients he was used and the technology that was available back then, I'm guessing it probably wasn't great. But they enjoyed it, and so that kind of like got me thinking about it, and so I hopped into it. Back then, we didn't have very good ingredients that you could get locally. 20 years ago, when we got Great Fermentations up on the north side, that was a big plus for us because you could get fresh malts, you could get proper yeast strains that were pure and very hearty, and then you could get fresh hops, which, if you like hops, makes a big difference.
Now, what do you think about the local beer scene? It seems to be exploding with craft beers. You know, a brewery is opening, you know, every few months, it seems like.
I think Indiana's taken it up a little slower than some of the coast, which is sort of like everything that happens here. But one of the things that happens is a lot of home brewers do become pro brewers. Certainly not, if you think about Sun King, Dave was never a home brewer, but Clay was. Newly opened Daredevil Brewing over in Speedway. Both of those guys were home brewers. You know, I don't know. I think it's just the time. And I'm very excited about the expansion. People say, oh, we've got too many. Well, no. I said, there's plenty of mediocre beer that we can still supplant with better stuff. So I don't think we've hit the bubble yet. And as long as a local place has good beer and their marketing is decent, I think they'll do well.
Well, now, there certainly seem to have been taking a lot of awards at the Brewers' Cup competition. So tell me a little bit about the Brewers' Cup and how that came about and maybe some of the results of that.
Well, in the early days, I wasn't terribly involved. Anita Johnson, part of Great Fermentations, the late Brooke Belli, who was part of Oak and Barrel. Those were some of the early people, and Tom Stillebauer, who just retired from his role at the Brewers' Cup. Those people really helped bring this competition, which is now really one of the largest and a very well thought of competition of its type. We just judged over 1,300 entries in four flights with about 100 judges. And I was the judge coordinator, so I saw every name of everybody who came and judged. And I tried to get it as close to 100% BJCP judge certification because I really like the quality and the training that that brings. Certainly anybody can be blessed with a good palate, and plenty of our local brewers are very astute and excellent judges. I've judged with Dave Colt at FOBAB, and he's not a BJCP judge, but the man has excellent knowledge of the styles and a really good palate, and it was a joy to judge with.
Now tell me what that certification is.
The Beer Judge Certification Program, you pass an exam, and we recently restructured that. So it requires you to have a certain bit of knowledge about the beer styles, and it also requires that you understand what flaws can arise in beer, and if they do, how to provide feedback to make it better. Because certainly writing on a score sheet that, you know, your beer isn't very good isn't incredibly helpful. But if, say, you know, your beer has some off flavors or off aromas, and usually these arise because of this action, and if you don't do that kind of activity next time, you'll probably have a better beer. And if you understand styles and recipe formulation, if you taste a beer and it's not quite right and you realize that they probably have a failing in part of the malt bill or the way they did the hops, and if you can provide them feedback to make it better, then what we really want to do is to help people make better beer. Yes, it's great to win the competition, and certainly a lot of people do enter to win, but if you can enter a competition and it gives you feedback that helps you improve yourself, then you're a winner anyway.
In a big, serious beer competition, what's it like?
Well, a lot of tables with judges. We utilize a score sheet. So, and in our style of judging for the BJCP, we judge one beer at a time. So they'll come in order, and you'll do 10 to 15 minutes per beer. And then at the end of that, your judge pair, which is usually two people, sometimes three, may choose one or two that go up to what we call a mini best of show. And in that final round, it's more of a head-to-head kind of competition, which is a lot more like what you see at GABF or FOBAB, where when you're judging, they bring all 10 or 12 out at once, which is a little hectic, but allows you to sip and go down the line. But you don't have as much paperwork there. On ours, as a judge, I first will cover up the beer to try and trap some aromas, and then I will do an appearance evaluation. So I'll look at its color and say, is that the right color for the style? What's clarity like? If this is a beer that's supposed to have really good clarity and it's hazy, they may get knocked down a point for that. You also evaluate what does the head look like on that beer. Some beers supposed to have big, fluffy, moussey-looking head, and so certainly you expect that, and if it's not there, then that sort of goes against them a little bit. But appearance only counts for 3 out of 50 points, so it's not huge. And then the next thing I do is go right to checking out the aroma, because we know aroma can fade over time, and so that's how you can smell what the malt is like and how does that fit to the stylistic comparison that you need. What do the hops smell like? Does it have esters? Is it supposed to have esters? If you're judging an American light lager, it better not have esters. So, you know, those are kind of things that you just sort of go through and you mentally start checking things off and you write down what you perceive, what you're missing that might be there. And if you have any flaws, make note of those. And then from there, I go on and I do an evaluation of the flavor. Very similar. And our score sheet has some little words that sort of like cue you in. I always tell people when they're taking the exam, use your cues. Make sure you discuss everything. It'll help your score, but it also later helps you be a better judge. So after I do the flavor, I go down and I evaluate the mouthfeel. So different beer styles will either feel very full or they may be thin and crisp. And so you want to make sure that the beer is hitting where you want it to and what's the carbonation like.
So they're supposed to, you're looking for a good example of the type of beer that it is, right?
Yes. And I always tease people. I say it's like the Westminster Dog Show because everybody's familiar with that. And I'm like, when we talk about styles, it's very much like a dog breed. So you think about the beagles have to have an ear that's so long and the color is this. I said, that's how we understand how we're going to judge that. And you as a consumer, if you learn about the styles, when you go into some place like 20 Tap or Hopcat, you can look at those styles and then you have a better idea if you're going to like that beer. Because as you said, if you don't like IPAs, you probably shouldn't be ordering one of those. But if you understand what a beer has to offer, then it allows you as someone who wants to enjoy it a better chance to choose.
We've been talking with Grandmaster Level Beer Judge and home brewer Sandy Cockerham. For more information on the Beer Judge Certification Program, go to bjcp.org or check out the organization's handy style guideline app. You've been listening to Eat Drink Indiana Radio here on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. Thanks so much for tuning in this week, and thanks also to our guests, chef and restaurateur Neil Brown of Pizzology and the Libertine Liquor Bar, and Craig Mintz of the Indie Film Fest. Thanks also to certified beer judges Sandy Cockerham and Bob Mack, and to Mike Sale of Brew Bracket. And thanks also to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat Drink Indiana Radio.